The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. This is McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk. TNT. TNT Radio.
Well, welcome to McBride and Brennan. I'm Major David McBride, military whistleblower. And I have my offsider, who we call a different thing. Sometimes we're Goose and Maverick. I thought today we might be Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. But maybe you like that? I kind of like that.
Well, I'm also the token career civilian, unfortunately.
Yeah, today you are. You are. Today you're outnumbered by military men. And we have a great lineup today. We have some double guests coming in, and I don't know, it might confuse all the viewers. We might have to deal with it one by one. Everybody here except for Robert has got military experience, and first I'm going to welcome Dan McKnight, who I've just been reading about, who's a man after my own heart, who's been in the military 13 years, US military, a US Marine, no doubt, and other things, and he is very like-minded to myself. He's now campaigning against what can only be described as bullshit wars, bullshit committing our forces, endless wars for all the wrong reasons. He's a patriot, and like me, he can see that the patriot's real duty is not to go to war for spurious reasons. The patriot's real duty is to stand up against phony wars, and where that's actually where we really need to do. So welcome, Dan McKnight.
Thanks, David. Appreciate you having me on.
It's fantastic.
You're right when you talk about standing up and opposing these bullshit wars. You know, in America, we raise our hand and swear an oath to defend our own constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And we can always identify those foreign enemies, you know, aggressor states and maybe terrorists. But it's the internal domestic enemies that nobody ever wants to talk about. And those are the ones we actually need to defend against. You know, the congressional members that advocate the responsibility to declare war, or a president that sleepwalks and takes us into World War III. You know, those are the enemies of the state that that veterans like myself have to defend against.
I know, and it's very hard. I had the same, and I got incensed. I don't know if you know much about my case, but I'm a whistleblower, and the idea that I'm the traitor. I mean, it shouldn't be too hard for people to we watch a lot of Hollywood movies and et cetera, and often it is the organization, it is the rotten organization that are the bad guys. And it's not necessarily the person fighting against the organization could actually be the good guy. And even though we are outnumbered numerically, as we know, being soldiers, often it's the outnumbered side that wins, because you have the moral high ground. You have right on your side, and that is so important. But that's right. I never signed up to go to any war the government sent me to, no matter how ridiculous. We sign up to protect the nation, as you said, and that sometimes means saying no if what is being done to the military forces is some sort of sham, which is only for some sort of ulterior motive, and that could be to enrich various arms companies and or to get people elected. I've always suspected. I was involved in politics briefly, but I have a good idea about how it works, and I know we in Australia, America would be the same. In fact, most of our lessons we've learnt from you, the bad lessons, but they do focus groups and they do opinion polling. And so a lot of very big decisions, sending good soldiers to their deaths and whatever, it was based on some sort of opinion poll where they think that they're going to win the midterm elections, or they're going to do, win some sort of seat. And for you and I, and our other guest we haven't introduced yet. That is just an absolute, you know, abomination that you would send soldiers, the most idealistic young men and women of our country who are prepared to stand there, as you said, and defend the flag. And the idea that you might sacrifice those lives to win, or to think, not even to win the election, but just to maybe get a few more, a bit more of an approval rating, a bump in the polls. Who knows? We'll send these guys over the top. Maybe we'll get a bump in the polls. Maybe we'll get a bigger donation from one of these big arms companies. I mean, that just makes my blood boil. It's an absolute abomination. And it just warms my heart to see what you're doing tomorrow. And to see the photos of you, you're a good example to me. You look fantastic in your suit and tie. You are the patriot. You are the one that's actually standing up for the US Constitution when everyone else around you is trashing it. So anyway, tell me more about tomorrow and the organization that you represent.
Sure. Yeah. The big rally tomorrow is, it's the Rage Against the War Machine. And, like-minded folks from left, right, and center are coming together. And our organization is a group of global war on terror veterans who I would consider right of center. So we're not, far right. We're not far left. We're kind of center right. And we believe in a responsible U.S. foreign policy that includes a proper declaration of war by the representatives of the people before we ever set foot on ground on foreign soil for aggressive purposes. And our organization started 3.5 years ago, and we went to Washington, D.C. and tried to lobby Congress to abdicate for an end of the war in Afghanistan that I served in. And we didn't want to see our children go back and fight in the same war that we'd fought in. And we sat in Liz Cheney's office, the heiress of the war profiteer fortune, Miss Liz Cheney herself, and asked her when we could come home from Afghanistan. And she looked us right in the eye and said, never. We'll be in Afghanistan forever. And so we said, to hell with Washington, D.C. We're going to go back and take the fight to the streets of all the capitals around the country. And we're in 40 of the 50 U.S. states now proposing legislation called Defend the Guard. And this is legislation that would prohibit the release of the state militia or the National Guard into federal service to serve in combat unless Congress has first put their name on the line and declared war. And it's catching fire. We had our first victory in 3 years this week in Arizona. It passed through the Military Affairs and Public Safety Committee on a straight party line vote. The Republicans voted for it and the Democrats voted against it. It's history has turned itself upside down. The Democrats have always been the anti-war party. And now the Republicans are saying, whoa, this is too much. We've lost our way. And so veterans with multiple tours in the global war on terror are uniting finally and saying, you know what? I took an oath to defend this country and I haven't been relieved of my oath just because I don't wear the uniform anymore. And it's going to be up to us to save this great republic.
Oh, I love that. I can't tell you how the hairs on the back of my neck are standing up to hear that, because there's a few of us out here, but I'm kind of like a one-man band for that sort of thing in Australia. And it just makes me so proud to hear you. I often hear people say to me, you inspire me or whatever, but you have, Dan McKnight, you have inspired me today. And I love the way that you're organized and you've got quite a lot of people, because that's right. We were there on the front lines. We're the people. I did 2 tours of Afghanistan as well, and I did one of Northern Ireland before. We were the people who are prepared to put our lives on the line. And my skin crawled this week. We're going through you might not know, Australia is very much in the American shadow, riding on the United States' coattails. And we just kind of become a bit of a lapdog. And we are totally committed to whatever the Washington DC, no matter how, we've become like a criminal gang. It wouldn't matter if Washington DC just carpet bombed Beijing and Russia tomorrow, we would be in on Washington's side. We don't have any say in the matter. And all these people who have never put on a uniform, who have never, would never let their children put on a uniform, are talking as though they've, as, you know, they're walking around with, as if they're the biggest, toughest guys in the world. And they're like, yeah, we're going to take on China. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And I know it's just bullshit. They're just people who are using it in order to advance their own political careers. And it just makes me sick. And I get very frustrated. But to hear what you guys are doing is just fantastic. We've just recently had the same thing here where we are committed, you know, we are just completely committed to war, basically. We've signed up to the agreement with the United States, with the UK, who are getting in on it too. We've said we're all the way there. We're basically US nuclear equipped bombers are allowed to land in, not land, but live in Australia, be based in Australia. We're getting, we're paying more money than Australia has to basically, you know, become part of the US Navy, because we're not going to be able to build submarines. We're going to have to take your submarines, and your submarines are going to have to be manned by your people. And so we have gradually, you know, we've become like Vichy France. We've just been invaded, and we have got this puppet government which does whatever the government you are raging against wants to do. So I can't tell you, coming from Australia, I want you to tell all your people in your organization, I am so grateful for what you're doing. I want you to keep up that fight, because we are, you know, we depend on your action now. And if only I hope I can do more to either get some sort of a branch of what you're doing out here, or just follow in what you're doing, because it's so important, because Australia has been swamped. We are totally in the grip of the war machine now, and it's happened by stealth, and nobody, it's our left-wing party, our equivalent of the rough equivalent of the Democrats, I guess, has become totally enamored with the idea of a war and buying more arms, and it just has bought all that sort of propaganda. And it's very frustrating, because you can't even get anybody to even pay any attention. So what do you think is going to happen at the rally tomorrow, and what's your next step?
Well, you know, I've been a few of these rallies in the last few years, never one to this extent that's been this organized. And I've always said, if five people show up, it's a victory. If 500 show up, it's a movement. I think that we're going to far exceed those numbers. I think we're going to see a pretty decent crowd. Some of the speakers they've got lined up, I mean, the great Tulsi Gabbard, who is the voice of reason from the left, and Ron Paul, who is the one that awoke me from a political slumber. Those two people are such clear speakers when it comes to the issues of war and peace, and the tone and the temperament that they deliver, that you can't help but believe their conviction. And, you know, Jimmy Dore is obviously a firebrand on the radio, and he knows how to deliver his message and has a giant following. And, you know, Dennis Kucinich, he led, you know, the American anti-war movement throughout the 80s and 90s and was a very popular politician, and he just never caught traction. But the one I'm the most excited about is my dear friend, Scott Horton. And I don't know if you know Scott at all, but he's the director of antiwar.com. He's a radio host. He's the author of a book that really started my efforts called Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. Anybody in the world that has not read this book, you must read it, because he laid out the argument that was recently, you know, released in the Afghanistan papers. Scott Horton was on top of that years ahead of time. And he knows how to deliver a message. So I think there's going to be a good crowd. It's going to be left, right, and center. We're going to see people that would never socialize or engage with one another outside of an event like this, coming together for one united purpose, and that's to stop the unnecessary wars, restrain the federal government of the United States from their war-making bloodthirst, and return the power to the people of America, and hopefully have a peaceful existence for the rest of our lives.
Well, it's fantastic. It's fantastic to hear. I need to get Scott Horton's book. There was another guy who was like me, who was in the Australian Special Air Service, SAS, you know, the sort of Delta Force equivalents, and he became a whistleblower too, and he loved Scott Horton, and he was telling me all about it. And but what a lineup. Tulsi Gabbard, I really admire. And again, she's someone that's put on a uniform, you know, and it made my blood boil. She's someone that's actually went to war for her country. And yet she's the one that's kind of be torn down by these idiots who have never, as I said, would never go near putting on a uniform for their country. So I like it. And Jimmy Dore, that's fantastic. What a great cross section. I think that's terrific that you've done that, because as I try to say to my own supporters and whatever, these wars will be won by alliances. There's no point being splinter groups.
That's right.
Got to have alliances.
And by dissolution, if I can interrupt for a moment.
No, I want
and by
you to
dissolution
interrupt.
Of these ridiculous notions of left and right, I mean, Roger Waters comes under Scott Horton in the lineup list. He's not. This is one of the co-founders of Pink Floyd. He's not a man of the far right, for crying out loud. And yet here you have David Gilmour, another one of the co-founders of Pink Floyd, repudiating Roger Waters. And just David Gilmour just becomes the brick in the wall, whereas Roger Waters stays outside of it. So, you know, we've just got to forget about left and right and think about, you know, you're either in favour of liberty or you're part of the fan club of the military, industrial, medical, high-tech complex.
Yeah, that's right. And it's all based on the same thing in the bullshit, in the sense that we're told we have to go to war because, you know, the intelligence or whatever says this. But what we know, we're all of us on this call know that is where the lie comes in. We are being talked into it by someone who wants to make a sale on false information and information operations that have been going on in 20 years, which try to tell us. I mean, you could defeat the argument in Australia in three lines. We're meant to be going, we're starting the Third World War because China are going to invade Taiwan, so we're told, and we have to go to their fight then for democracy and freedom. But even under our own government policy, Taiwan is part of China. China can't invade Taiwan. But the Americans, the US anyway, I need to keep saying that they've just totally schmoozed everybody. They own the mainstream media, as we saw with the with the vaccine sort of propaganda, the way that it was universal blockade of anything but the sort of propaganda. And that's what really worries me. That is what's changed from the 1970s. And back in the 70s, Seymour Hersh's story would have brought down the government. But today, it doesn't even get covered because the media have been bought out, and that is one of the big problems. This is the sort of thing, yeah, Dan, what you're organising, this is the sort of thing that ended the Vietnam War because it got coverage in the mainstream media. But now one of our biggest enemies, maybe our biggest enemy, is the mainstream media. I think we have to go to an ad break, don't we?
We do indeed. So Rage Against the War Machine, it starts in one day and what, few hours in Washington.
We're going to have an ad, or?
We are, indeed. We're going to an
Let's
ad break.
Have an
this
ad.
Is TNT.
TNT Radio's Alan Miller.
On the point of controversy and cancelling or censoring, or you're not allowed to say that, this week we've seen a lot of that in demands for people to go one way or another, in attacks that have been made, calling people names, using the C word, calling everyone a conspiracist, rather than having a conversation or a discussion, rather than addressing why, for instance, in Sheffield, residents came out on the street and said, we're not going to have these barriers. And councillors recognising actually this is a problem, rather than saying we've got questions about, you know, the impacts to local businesses and families, and rather than addressing those things, some people, you know, in the press and elsewhere want to say these are all just conspiracists, and that's a big problem. And we think that, you know, certainly together we think that free speech is paramount, and on TNT Radio, free speech is vital and fundamental.
Alan Miller on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard, Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election, for people of faith, is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
Are you even listening to me?
What?
God. Your kids may not be listening, but pretty much every voice-activated smart device is. Just tell it to play.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to McBride and Brennan. I'm David McBride, formerly Major David McBride, and I'm here with Dr. Robert Brennan and a host of other military people, Dan McKnight. And it might be time to introduce our new guest, or we're going to finish up with Dan first. Robert, what do you want to do?
I reckon we'll wish Dan adieu and repeat our plea to everyone in the United States to turn up to Washington to rage against the war machine and work towards peace on earth.
Yeah, Dan, I want to repeat what I've said. I think what you're doing is fantastic. I have trod the same path as you in many ways. I look up to you as a hero, and what you're doing is fantastic work. And I totally agree with everything you say. We don't get much traction in Australia on those issues, but to say that the government needs to actually support the people, not support the government with these stunts, which end up getting soldiers killed, whichever way you look at it, or civilians killed. But you're doing it's not an exaggeration to say you're doing God's work. Keep it up, and give my regards to everybody in that fantastic endeavor tomorrow.
We'll do it. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. And our next guest on TNT, this is in the McBride and Brennan show, is Joachim Hagiopian. And Joachim is a West Point graduate, former Army officer, of course, therefore, and he's the author of Don't Let the Bastards Get You Down, his expose of his time at West Point, and also his take on the military-industrial complex and the like. We're sort of extending the theme here. That was about exposing a faulty U.S. military leadership system based upon ticket-punching up the seniority ladder, invariably weeding out the best and the brightest and leaving mediocrity and order followers rising to the top as politician bureaucrat generals designated to lose every modern US war by elite design. Interesting. After the military, he earned a master's degree in clinical psychology and worked as a licensed therapist in the mental health field with abused youth and adolescents, I think in the Los Angeles area. Before extending his interests out even further and essentially becoming a journalist of sorts. And so Joachim is well-read, and in fact, he's gone on to write other books besides. And well, Joachim, what are you going to talk to us about today?
Well, I think we have a good intro into where we're headed with the whole war situation, particularly in Iraq, we can talk about Afghanistan, we can talk about Ukraine, we can talk about Iraq, we can talk about the war machine, we can talk about West Point, we can talk about pretty much how there is an elite that controls all the countries, and that includes, of course, the media, the military-industrial complex, the drug-making complex, the pandemics, all of it. There's a war right now against humanity, and it's called genocide, and they're calling it the Great Reset. So we can talk about any and all the above.
Well, let's start. I'd love to start with West Point and your stories about basically promoting the worst people and stopping the best, because that was something which I felt about the Australian system. I didn't feel it. So I've been in both the British Army and the Australian Army. I didn't feel it so much was the case in Britain, but maybe I was just ignorant. But in Australia, I definitely saw that, to say that anybody who displayed any kind of initiative or bravery or any kind of standing up to the machine was stopped at about major level, and the only people that got ahead were the absolute arse-kissers, for want of a better word, or people that just they seemed to select the people who wouldn't give any kind of trouble. And so tell us about your book, Don't Let the Bastards Get You Down.
Yeah, it's a ticket punching system where you just obey your superior officer, you ingratiate, you called it ass kissing. That's exactly what it is. So that your superior will promote you, and then you punch your ticket, through seniority, and you go up the ladder, playing the game. And that game, of course, is extended. It's the same game in the political game. It's the same game in the corporate game. It's the same game in any kind of hierarchical organization. You kiss your ass of the superiors, and they reward you as you go up. And as you go up, you play the game, meaning that you are on the side of the controllers, the ones that are doing all these wars and pandemics and genocides. You go along with it, because if you actually break with it and be your own person with a sense of ethics and morality, then they come after you, and they will sometimes even assassinate you, or they smear your reputation and your career. This is the way the game is played. And that's why, as the late, great George Carlin, my favorite comedian of all time, it's a club and you and I ain't in it. And in order to be in that club, you have to basically sell your soul. And that's no bullshit. That is the truth.
Yeah, no, well, I'm living testament to that. It's a small, you wouldn't have had much time to know much about me, but I was a major in the Australian Army, and I came from a sort of very blue chip background like you. I mean, I went to Sandhurst rather than West Point, and I went to Oxford University before that. I believed in all the system, and I was a lawyer doing everything right. But I found exactly as you said, and also they have almost sort of what I would call grooming techniques, where they would, once you promote someone who doesn't deserve to be promoted simply because they haven't done the right things, and then you own them, because then they're thinking, oh wow, I feel really beholden to General so-and-so because he's promoted me to his staff, therefore I'll just do whatever General so-and-so wants, whatever it is. And it's kind of like a grooming system, yeah, where they select, once people have been selected by them, they're so they forget about the law, they forget about the duties, and they suddenly owe duty, which overrides their sense of doing the right thing. I saw that a lot, and while you talk about it in sort of larger theoretical terms, I'm a living testament to that. You probably are as well. I was pushed out of the military as a major, and I knew a lot of other people who are in the same boat. If you actually wanted to get the job done, if you were in Afghanistan and you wanted to get supplies in, or you wanted to actually kill the Taliban, or you wanted to actually improve the situation, you wouldn't have a career. And there's an apocryphal, well, there's a story, it's the truth. Our head of our defense force had a brother who everybody said was far better leader, but the brother was pushed out because he stood up to a commanding officer as a major. And that seemed to become a very political force, and anyone that actually stood up gets shunted. That wasn't what they wanted to hear. And he ends up, teaching English as a foreign language or something. And still working in Canberra. But yeah, the last thing that they seem to want is someone who's a genuine leader of men and women. They want the ass kisser. The ass kisser gets ahead. And because once you've got ass kissers at the top, you're always going to get what you want. And I've had a good example of this. One of these former heads of the Defence Force got caught up in something after leaving the Defence Force, got caught up in basically signing off, getting our equivalent of the president sign off on things he wasn't meant to sign off on, because he's just not used to saying no. In fact, I said to him, what I was being, one of the techniques they used against me, you might have had this when you were in the military as well, was that because when I was becoming a whistleblower and saying things weren't right, they tried to give me mandatory psychological reviews, which is kind of like a way to get rid of someone, because you could just basically give a nod and a wink to the psychologist and say, fail this guy. And then once he's failed you, you can't, I mean, you can pass a physical test, you can pass an eye test, and you can argue about that. But the fact that a psychologist has said you're not suitable, it's hard to argue with that. So I'd done a few of these tests, and I said to the psych, she passed me, and she said, you're very angry about the corruption, but you're not mad. And I said, why would the general at the very top of the tree, why would he dud his soldiers for political advancement? He's a three-star general. He's got nowhere else to go, nowhere else to be promoted. Why wouldn't he stick up for his soldiers rather than just throw them to the wolves because the politicians want them? And the psychologist said, and you're a psychologist, you'll be able to confirm whether this, she said, if you've been crawling and kissing ass all your life, you can't stop just because you're a 3 or 4 star general. Yeah. I think she was right, you know.
Yeah, in too deep, you know. And I mean, really, the system itself breeds psychopathy, psychopaths, people that are just purely ambition and will do anything to get ahead and get more power. That's pretty much the definition of psychopathy, along with the fact that they have no conscience or empathy. They're just all about, you know, themselves and promotion and power. So, yeah, these are the, quote, leaders of our country, of our militaries, of our wars, of everything that's gone wrong on this earth. These are the leaders because of the system that promotes these psychopaths, which is a mental illness. I mean, we don't want people that are crazy running the world, but that's exactly what we're stuck with at this time.
Yeah, look, I can believe that. I've noticed that I grew up relatively idealistic, and it's taken a while for things to sink in, but I see it in relation to my own case and politicians and also very, very wealthy people. I used to have some sort of like respect for someone who was very wealthy, but the more, and I've heard that psychopathy, you know, thrown around recently, but the more I look at it, the people that get ahead, the people that sort of make billions and then go on to turn billions into millions, it increasingly occurs to me that they've got some sort of psychopathic, you know, mentality where they really don't have any empathy for other people. It's really all a game. And if I can trick you into doing something or giving me something for less than it's worth, I'm the winner of that game. And some people, it took me till I was about 50 years old to realize some people are wearing a mask all the time, or, you know, most of the time. And that quite shocked me. I thought that, you know, people might be cranky people or have a bad day or whatever, but I was quite surprised to realize how many people that I thought were like me are not like me, and are not just different, but they're pretending to be something that they're not. You know, the pedophile priests, we saw this in Australia. We were very shocked by this, people who are preaching the Bible from the pulpit to sort of crowded cathedrals during the day, and then at night or straight after church, touching up altar boys. And it was quite shocking. And But that is not the it's not the only isolated place where you have people who have gone into a profession or somewhere with completely the wrong intentions, and not only that, but pretending to be one thing and actually, as you said, are actually psychopathing and doing something else. I was quite surprised. I thought that was a really, really rare percentage of the world, but unfortunately, it seems to be a lot bigger. But maybe you could tell us about your latest book or whatever whatever research you've been doing lately. And I think we'll be prepared to be shocked. But tell us more about what you found out in the last couple of years.
Sure. Yeah, I basically felt like somebody's got to tell the truth about this pedophilia scourge that has taken hold on this earth, basically in all the high positions, be it in government, the military is part of it. You know, they're part of the trafficking. The CIA are the coordinators of the basically the pedophilia network on this earth. The CIA, the MI6, you know, all the intelligence services, they serve basically the elites, the bloodline controllers, the Rothschilds, Rockefellers, you know, nobility, royal families, etc. They call the shots, and everybody else does what they're told, you know. I ended up basically taking on this whole thing about exposing around the world the pedophilia network. The trafficking network of children, usually young women and children, and then the things that they do, which we don't need to get into the details here, but it's really horrific. And I did it with the idea that nobody really has ever really compiled all the evidence in one place before in the history of all humankind. And in the last 75 years, you know, it used to be, you know, you have sexually blackmail when a husband cheats on his wife that has a position, and then they control them. But after about 50 years ago, it switched over from adultery to basically children as the commodity, as you know, and as the currency of basic sexual blackmail control. Capturing all the compromised people in the top levels, so that basically all the people that are gatekeepers are either pedophiles themselves or they are enabling the pedophilia network, and they can't go against it or they're killed or out. And so that's how they get control of all the people with power. I did chapter after chapter going from country to country around the world, including Australia. And I have several chapters on the American scandals. I devoted two books to United Kingdom. I mean, you know, Freemasonry and all the rest and the Vatican. I mean, yeah, I mean, I devoted five books to pedophilian empire, Satan, sodomy, and deep state, exposing all of it. And I did it for the reason that you can tell, the government is corrupt. Everybody knows this. They've known it forever. And, you know, they shrug their shoulders. Yeah, that's just the way it is. But if you actually tell the truth about, quote, leaders of the world and what they're doing to children, maybe that might have an effect where people get off their ass and want to become activists for the good of trying to protect the children of the world. It is kind of important. So that might energize and activate people into doing the right thing, and not just closing their eyes and going, oh, this is too disturbing, I can't handle it.
It is
a lot of people did.
And we're going to return to this important topic after a quick ad break. This is TNT.
Give Me a Minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Former San Francisco police officer Christopher Samayoa was on his fourth day on the job back in 2017 when he fatally shot a carjacking suspect named Keita O'Neill. That was during a police chase. The AP says O'Neill was suspected of assaulting a California lottery employee and stealing a van that belonged to the agency. The San Francisco DA at the time, Chesa Boudin, charged Samayoa with manslaughter and other charges in 2020, bragging that his decision was historic. Now, Boudin was one of those left-wing DAs who didn't much care for locking away all criminals. He was recalled by the voters last year, and his successor, Brooke Jenkins, says she will drop the manslaughter charge against Samayoa because she says it was politically motivated. You think? Samayoa became the first ever San Francisco police officer to be charged for an on-duty killing. Jenkins claims that her predecessor's handling of the case revealed internal conflicts, including filing the charges in a hurry just before the statute of limitations was set to expire for manslaughter. Bravo to Brooke Jenkins for righting a terrible wrong that could have gotten a lot worse. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. Even the smallest amount detected will cost your license. Drug drive and you'll get caught, long after the high is gone. Think road safety. A message from the Government of South Australia.
You're with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to McBride and Brennan. Oh, sorry, I cut you off.
No. You first, David.
Welcome back to McBride, Major David McBride, military whistleblower. And we are here with Dr. Robert Brennan and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And Joachim, whose name I can't quite pronounce because I don't have very good language skills. How do you pronounce your name, Joachim?
Yeah, you got it right now. It's Joachim, yeah.
Joachim. It's a very cool name. And tell us, so what happens? I've always suspected, and I think I'm not the only one, but obviously it's not in the mainstream, that Epstein was involved in some sort of a blackmail racket rather than simple pedophilia, and that he was, as you said, what a good way to control people. And I know that they do it in Israel a lot with the Palestinians. You set them up with some underage woman or man or whatever they're into, and then you own them for the rest of their political career. It must be the world's most easy way to control countries. But tell us, this is obviously your area of specialty. Tell us what you found out without us all getting busted by police or sued for defamation. I mean, you said you found out it was happening in Australia as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean... Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, of course, they were partners in crime that were part of this whole operation. But who got them together? Robert Maxwell, the triple spy, you know, Israel spy, British spy, you know, Russian spy, giving away secrets, you know. But anyway, he actually, and he was a media mogul, obviously, in Britain, and his youngest daughter, was Ghislaine. And so he got them together. Basically, it was a military intelligence operation out of Israel that brought, you know, Epstein and Maxwell together as boyfriend and girlfriend, but with the idea that they would run this operation, this blackmail operation. And so it was kind of a setup where we got, you know, all basically the MI6 and everybody involved with the intelligence services to get the lowdown on all the top leaders. You know, they went after the Australian. They actually got the Australian prime minister. They got Clinton's, you know, they begin. I mean, they got and Hollywood. Oh my God, they have so many. So I mean, this guy Epstein was able to capture all the, you know, the MIT doing research. You know, I mean, he was part of this whole development that ended up the pandemic. You know, he wanted his genes to be impregnating all these, you know, planting the seed and having this. It's almost like, you know, the almost like the white nationalists that want the higher hybrid blood kind of thing. Well, you know, they do have hybrid blood. They're psychopaths, and it goes back for centuries. You know what they do to children. Blood sacrifice has been in many cultures, and so yeah. So they've been controlling the earth for a long time. I mean, we can talk about the Rothschilds, you know, back in the Napoleonic Wars, where they backed both sides to every war, and they've been doing it ever since. And that way they can't lose, and they only gain more power with every war that they have. So, yeah, this is the world we're living in. It's an ugly world, and it's up to us decent people to unite, and then basically, in our own self-defense, because now they've declared war on humanity. There is a genocide right now going down against all the people on this earth. They want to contaminate people with toxins with their shots, the pandemics. And it's not over yet, as Bill Gates always says. The next one's around the corner. And what came out of the Bali G20 meeting in November? Vaccine passports. That's what they're going after. Here, they overplayed their hand with the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic. Everybody was tired of the lockdowns and all the rest of that. So, but, you know, that comes out of the agenda in November of 2022. So, I mean, even though they overplayed it and people got sick of it, it's not over yet. Basically, we have President, imposter and thief Biden, basically saying it's still a public hazard out there officially until June of 2023. The EU voted to keep the certificate, the passport certificate, going till June 23. So, yeah, it's not over yet. They want to get people so the DNA, the human DNA, ends up basically altered and we become a hybrid species, you know, part machine, part human. And a lot of people die along the way, obviously, because there's so much evidence of that.
I've got a couple of questions for Joachim, if I may. The first one is, I mean, just tying some of these themes together, we're talking about some sort of filtration process so that Machiavellian sociopathy rises to the top, right?
Right. But
then there's the question, I mean, whether that would necessarily mean that paedophilia would rise to the top. I mean, my take on Epstein and little St. James Island and the like is that, I mean, one way to look at it is that this is evidence of some sort of ideological paedophilia. Another way of looking at it is just that, well, we've got a honeypot kind of situation happening where we've got Epstein set up as a sort of a fake billionaire hyper-investor when he wasn't. We've got Ghislaine Maxwell and her father, who's Yan Benjamin Hock, in with Mossad, and we're just having Israel having to control its interests via, I mean, I can imagine a scenario where, let's say, Richard Branson, say, goes to bed with an 18-year-old, or with, you know, someone goes to bed with Lady Gaga, who went down there multiple times, but then they wake up and there's a 10-year-old in the bed next to them, and there's cameras going off, and then they've got him forever, you know. So there's two ways of looking at it. One is that it's espionage and statecraft, and another way that it's something darker and more disturbed and actually sexually depraved. But, you know, where would you fall on those two sides, or maybe a third one?
Probably most of those who are compromised through sexual blackmail are not pedophiles. And they fall into the category of party drinking, and they think they're with somebody of age, and they end up in bed with the camera going, and that's underage. That's probably how they grab most of the people that are gatekeepers and part of the system, the enablers. But there are hardcore pedophiles, and you know, in the DSM, you know, diagnostic manual, and you know, they, you know, claim that only like 1-2%. No, it's more than that. And obviously, you know, we talked about psychopathy. The percentage of people that basically, it's almost like a bloodline thing. You know, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, they have been overlords of this pedophilia, and they have all these secret societies, you know, the Jesuits and the Knights of Malta, the Freemasons, and they actually do engage. And also the royal family of Britain, they have engaged in ritual, satanic rituals, where they drink the blood. They have a whole adrenochrome industry that basically, you know, makes people high and keeps them looking young. And that's why it's such an appeal with Hollywood. But yeah, they actually go through rituals and eat the hearts and organs of the children. It is so perverted and sick. And that's where people can't really even wrap their heads around it, because it's just so unbelievable. But it is the truth that there are top people up there in power that get off on this stuff. And they're so inculcated from the early days of their youth all the way into it. I mean, yeah, I wrote 2 books on Britain out of 5 on pedophilia. Well, look at their system. And it's also Australia and Britain, of course, and the United States. But their system is such that if you are in the elite class, you go off to school and it's not co-ed. You go off to a boys' school, say, and then you get molested by the older boys. And this is the system. This is the way it is. And all the prestige so-called prep schools that are only the elite exclusive go to, well, this is how it gets started, you know? Mm. And so, yeah, it snowballs from there, and they're part of the system, and they either pay or they don't play, and then they die or are no longer rich and famous and of power.
Yeah, I mean, like, returning to my previous question, I am inclined to the formulation that it's a blackmail scam kind of thing, but by the same token, when you look at that structure on Little St. James, you know, you've got this building that, okay, it's blue and white striped, that's no big deal, but it's got a golden dome with a golden big owl there, and it kind of looks like a temple, you know. So on one hand, I think there's not some sort of like pagan, occult, ritualistic connection. But on the other hand, I kind of think, well, why would he have a building that looks like that? That just kind of looks like a temple. It is weird. So I'm open-minded, but I don't know what your take on that is.
Oh, yeah. They engaged in rituals there. There's underground tunnels. Yeah, they've done the whole bit. They've murdered children, sacrificed children, and then they kill children that want to go to the police and talk. So, yeah, it's all part of this ugly satanic system that seems to, you know, be in control of the earth. You know, they have that expression, the devil's dominion is the earth. Well, there's a lot of truth to that.
One final question before back to David. I know the time's running out, but, you know, you're Armenian descent, are you?
Well, my father's Armenian, so that made me say half.
Yeah, so it's, you know, there's different ideas of intergenerational trauma, and I wonder the extent to which the Armenian genocide of 1915-1916 informs your interest in taking care of the children, your interest in anti-war activism, in leading to a more peaceful world. You're very, very interested in this, and I wonder how much that one informs the other.
Well, my mother, she's part Ojibwe Indian. So, I mean, I got genocide on both sides of my family.
You have.
I'm very sensitive to truth, justice. I'm very idealistic, obviously. And I'm all about trying to get the truth out there so we can unite as a human species to remain on this earth as a human species. Because I've been doing a lot of writing lately with the articles. And I talk about genocide because that's exactly what's going on. My latest article is basically the whole situation in Ohio, where we have a large segment of about 30 million Americans now who might be dying of cancer, liver disease, all kinds of problems now, respiratory, from the gas explosions. They actually did a control burn, which actually made it into gas that spread all over the place. We got a situation, and then there's a whole bunch of those same kind of situations going on, a whole bunch of, you know, railroad derailments and the gas chemical hazards. It's all over the place. In the meantime, they're paying attention to the balloon with the mainstream media, you know, as diversion. So, we got a situation where the good people of the earth have to step up if we want to be able to survive.
Well, that's right. Yeah, well, if the greedy bastards don't maintain the quality of the railroads and the braking systems of the trains, then you got vinyl chloride, and cancer doesn't appear the day after the exposure.
Yeah, I think that's one of the. I agree, and the whole circle about that, the way that was a really terrible thing that what happened in Ohio, and as Joaquin said, but everyone was just talking about the goddamn balloon. I mean, that shows how off track we've become. Anyway, this is our outro music, is it?
Joaquin, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming in,
and David.
Keep up the good fight.
All right, catch up. Bye.